Lieto's with us right now. Lieto, good morning.
Morning, Oliver. How are you?
I'm fantastic, man. How are you?
I'm great.
Let's jump straight into it, Lieto. Illegal mining. Tell us practically what is it?
Okay, so first and foremost, a lot of people assume when a mine closes a shaft, that shaft, or when it closes operations, the assumption is that there is no more gold, so it has been mined out. But actually, what is happening is that the mine has determined that its returns are not as they used to be or what they should be. And so they close the mine off in order just to save costs for themselves. And then usually in South Africa, what happens is they found ways to circumvent rehabilitation of the land, right? And so those shafts stay open. They stay as open pits in the ground that still hold gold. So what people then do is, people, especially old miners, so if you take people who have been mining for their whole lives and then say to them, well, you can no longer mine or you don't have any work anymore. Those old miners know everything, right? They know the escape tunnels. They know ways to get into the mine without actually going down in a shaft, right? And so, in a catch, I mean. And so that means that those people can go. They know what they're looking for when they're looking for gold. And that's what they do. They go underground. They start mining the gold themselves. And then there is a whole, what people don't notice is that it's not just the mining that happens, right? There's a whole economy and a whole ecosystem that goes around the mining itself, and to be sustainable and somehow be profitable as well.
How do they feed into the economy? Who buys from them? Somebody must be buying from them. Is it the same companies, or the same entities, the same organization, the same people that buy from legitimate mining companies? And what is done with this gold?
Okay, so what happens is, let's take Belgium for instance. You have a place called G Hostel. It's a hostel that was meant for miners way back in the 80s and 70s, right? Those miners are still there. So they have techniques in how to get the gold and sort of and refine it.
Sure.
They know how to refine it in mini refineries. And then what happens is they take the gold either to Botswana or Mozambique. But what seems to be the channel of choice right now is Botswana. And I've been hearing rumblings that the new market is also into Namibia. So they smuggle it into Botswana, they smuggle it into Namibia. And there they have buyers who then take it into the rest of Africa, into African states that don't particularly have money, but people in those countries have a demand for gold in order to basically be able to measure their wealth. So people, for instance, in Zimbabwe, people in Zambia measure their wealth, the wealthiest of the wealthy measure their wealth in gold.
Yeah.
And so they buy this illegal gold.
And let's talk about the experience of these illegal. These are people who are experienced miners. They know exactly what they're doing. But, you know, you need equipment and resources, and you need, for instance, you need to blast to be able to loosen up the rocks. And I don't really know how it works. I'm not a miner of some sort. But we know the basics, that there's blasting that happens with dynamite, and, you know, you need heavy machinery, you need electricity. How do illegal miners do that without any of those resources?
Okay, so the blasting part, right, is when you are trying to expand the shaft you already have, right? So there are different types of miners. There's people called shaft sinkers, right? So the shaft sinkers are the people who go in and basically open new shafts, right? And so they have terminology for it. So in Belgium, for instance, barricade, it's when they're crawling through the small spaces. That's when they're trying to open a new shaft. So that's when most of the blasting happens. But what happens is, with the already existing shafts as they are, you can just go in and walk upright and basically just start chipping away at whatever area is deemed to have gold with the experience. So the blasting part would be if there was regulation. So most of the time they don't blast. When they do blast, it's to expand whatever they're doing. But most of the time they opt not for blasting, because remember, they don't have the infrastructure that the mine had before. So when you blast, there's a potential for methane leakage, right? And which is one of the greatest dangers to illegal miners. Methane leakage without extraction fans is deadly. And most of the time, they sleep in there. So if you have methane leakage and you're sleeping in there, methane poisoning, you basically go to sleep and you never wake up if there's a methane leakage. And so those are the risks they face. If you are blasting with methane in a shaft that has a lot of methane, you could basically also blow yourself up. And so those are the risks they face. So blasting is the last last option for them.
Generally, how safe is illegal mining? I mean, you mentioned they sleep in there. I wouldn't imagine. How long do they sleep for? Talk to us about the lifestyle of illegal miners more generally.
Okay, so the lifestyle, if you go into illegal mining to be profitable, because there's such a large chain that you have to go through. So the person who mines, that's the person who takes the goods to Botswana or Namibia, right? There are certain middlemen that you must appease along the way, right? And so what happens is, if you want to be profitable, and I mean people who are becoming profitable, I don't mean 1,000 rand or 2,000 rand. Those are the small-scale illegal miners. They are large-scale illegal miners who will go into a mine for 6 months and not come out, right?
They're in a shaft for 6 months?
Yes, they're in the shaft for 6 months. They're in the dark, right?
How do they live?
Actually, this is where the economies of illegal mining exist, right? They go into the shaft, they get the gold, right? And then they have it in like these, they call it balls. They say it's kitty ball, right? Of unrefined gold, right? It's not really worked yet. But you can trade that unrefined gold with the security guards. They can then somehow get you money. What happens is there are people who go and sell them food. And so in towns like Belcom and Virginia, you are now, you have to go with your trading license to go and buy wholesale goods. Right? You can't just go and say, give me 2 pallets of cool drinks, 2 pallets of alcohol, 2 pallets of this. They want a trading license from you, because that's most likely the people who are benefiting from the economy of illegal miners. So let's take alcohol, for instance. 2 cans of beer is 150 rand to 250 rand, depending on the risks that the seller is taking, right? A loaf of bread, 70 rand to 90 rand. There's a whole lot of economy. So if you can, basically in Welcome, here's the thing. If you can get a hold of 50 Nando's chicken, you are assured to get 1.3 million rand.
Wait, what? Wait, repeat that.
So you can't,
15 chickens, so 50 Nando's 50, chickens is 1.3 million rand.
So 50, 50.
Oh, 50.
So if you go to a Nando's in Belcom and you buy 20 full chickens, suddenly the police will walk in.
Wow.
Because now there's a suspicion that you are supplying goods to what you call.
So in the community, there's a common knowledge that there are people feeding into the value chain of illegal miners by selling them food, selling them drinks, and various other amenities at a really high marked up price. And so you are under suspicion should the community think you're feeding into the value chain.
Exactly. There are people who download movies illegally and series illegally for them and put them on like portable players so that they can go and watch in the mine. So literally for 6 months, these people do not come out, right? And then at the point that they do come out, actually, part of the dangers are these. So the one gentleman I who lives like 2 neighborhoods away from me, he was an illegal gold miner. So he comes out. And so when you come out of a shaft after 6 months, what happens is the first thing, you have to come out at night, right? You can't come out during the day. You start to hurt your eyes because your eyes are just used to being in the dark for 6 months, right? Their skin, they haven't bathed in a whole in 6 months. So their skin is frail. Their eyes aren't adjusted to the light. So they come out at night. And what happens is he'll come home and shut his window. So he'll blacken his window so the sun doesn't come in. And they slowly introduce the sun to themselves all throughout. So the people then, there are people who target the illegal miner. So they know when an illegal miner comes out, he has 2 million rand, 3 million rand, 5 million rand sometimes, right? And so they become a target of people who go and rob them. They go into their houses, they beat them, they break their bones, and at times they kill them for their money. And that was what happened to this gentleman. And there was a whole other process of the bad that you speak about. And how the retaliation systems work, and they're in gangs. So the miners have a gang, and they're gangs of robbers. It's a whole thing. Because remember, if I rob you of illegal goods, you can't necessarily go to the police and say, hey, guys, the money I got from illegal mining got stolen by Oliver.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's a whole cycle to it. And so the economies, so let me show you the good part of this economy that they form, right? Even if it's hyperinflated prices. So a guy who sells the alcohol to the miners, can now, because he's selling the alcohol at 150 rand for two cans of beer, can afford to hire 6-7 people to package and transport this food, these beverages, right? These alcoholic beverages. And so you are now feeding potentially 7 other families.
Wow.
From the illegal gold mining. The person who goes and buys the chickens from Nando's now finds 2 or 3 staff members he can pay off to keep quiet in order to make the 50 chickens. Now you're potentially feeding 3 or 4 other families, and then you're feeding all the you're giving the families of the security guards extra money because you have to pay off the security guards. And so when you're not paying somebody a living wage, like a security guard,
yeah.
If somebody goes to him and says, listen, I have my guy in here, when we get him out the night he comes out 6 months from now, or I'm just going to bring food in. Here's 20,000 rand. Here's 50,000 rand per time. So every time I come in to bring food, I give him 50,000 rand. What do you think the security guard is going to do? Is he going to shoot me on the spot or take the 50,000 rand?
Mm-hmm. And these are security guards who are supposed to, one, protect the mines and not allow in unauthorized people into mines, into shafts and that sort of thing. So their hands are greased, right. And this is how illegal miners make it in?
Yes. But remember, and here's the thing, when you talk about protecting of a mine, right, it's murky ground to begin with. So let me show you what the mines do not to shut down. So apparently there's a heavy price or a penalty to be paid if you shut down. One of the ways in which they circumvent the law of shutting down and having to pay the community, the CSI they owe, or the municipality, and rehabilitating the land, what they do is, There is a basic minimum for having a mine in South Africa. You need to have, one, have a mine manager. Two, you have to have around the mine manager, you have to have at least 5 or 6 staff members. And then you have to have a workforce of about 50 to 100 workers. And so they keep up that minimum. And then what they do then is, basically the people in the minimum, those that 50 to 100 people, don't actually even have to go to work. They just get paid so that the mine doesn't have to incur the large sums of money that come with shutting down a whole operation. And so when you're saying protecting the mine, it's just people protecting holes in the ground.
So I have two questions, because we're talking here about safety first, right? How safe is the exercise of being an illegal miner? That's to say, is it any less or any more safe than being a miner in a regulated, registered mine where there are certain regulations about how workers must be treated, what the working environment must be like? Or do many of these illegal miners die in shaft? How many of them who go in make it out after those 6 months?
Right. So the only account you have of how many people have died is for those who survive and come out, right? And at times you don't have those. So let me show you how unsafe it is, right? So in a normal conventional mine, you have clothes that you need to wear, steel-toe boots, hard hat. And so even the way you enter the mine is through a catch, right? It's through that big metal elevator that goes deep down into the ground and brings you back, right? The way they have to enter the illegal miners, there is no catch. The catch doesn't work or it's been broken down. So what happens is they have to use the escape tunnels. So when you build a mine, you have to build the catch on the one side. On the extreme side of the mine, of the shaft, you have to build an escape route. So a hole in the ground that basically miners can crawl out of in case of emergencies, right? So they have to use these big holes in the ground and basically crawl their way down into what the mine is.
Mm.
Usually people die in the process of crawling their way down. There's a mine here in Belgium called St. Helena. So the St. Helena mine, basically, is not just in the St. Helena neighborhood, but it is basically under the whole town. So their escape hatch is literally almost when you get to the township. So they have to go and basically go on their hands and knees for about 20 to 30 kilometers crawling, right? And then when they get to...
Wait, you mean actually crawling for 20 kilometers?
So the escape hatch is not big enough for you to stand up straight. So
wow.
You have to crawl.
Wow.
So it's a declining crawl. And so it's a slope crawl. It's not a crawl down, like directly down. So what happened is the St. Helena mine now is an ultra deep mine. So a semi ultra deep mine. And so when they get to the point at which they need to access the mine, they have to now sort of like wrap themselves around the extraction fans or the infrastructure for the extraction fans and then slide down to where the mine is, about a kilometer or two down. And then only will they start to illegally mine. So in that process alone, some people die. At times they had to go and get a dead body out of the escape tunnel because it was starting to stink up. And a lot of people could not go either go in or out. So the illegal miners themselves had to go and report them, say, hey guys, we think somebody is stuck in a tunnel and he's dead. And so a safety team from the mine has to be deployed to go and get that person out. And then another incident that happened in Zalcom was a group of illegal miners went in, started mining during the night, right, with their hammers and whatever and whatever, with their rudimentary tools. And then they broke apart a rock which has a methane deposit behind it. They don't notice this because it doesn't shoot out. So they say if it shoots out in a mist, they now know that there's methane and everyone must evacuate, right? But at times you don't necessarily see the methane seepage. So they sat at night, they cooked, they ate, they went to sleep. And then the next morning, 40 people were dead. They all inhaled the methane while they were asleep and didn't wake up. And so these are the dangers. Or at times the methane is seeping, you are beating metal against metal. So the sparks are there, they are flying, and then it all explodes. While you are still awake, not just going asleep and dying, but while you're awake, you're hitting metal and a spark flies and there's methane in the shaft, you blow up, you die. Those are the risks that they face. But the other risks are these. So imagine, Oliver, it's you and I, we are now illegally mining, right? You hit pay dirt. So you get to make 6 or 7 balls of gold. 6 or 7 balls of gold is round about 3.2 million rand, right?
Yeah.
I, on the other hand, only have 2 of these balls. My 6 months is almost coming to an end. What do you think I'm going to do? Am I just going to let you walk out with 3.2 million rand while I have maybe close to 1 million? I'm then going, the envy starts to build in between. So there's no honor amongst these. So illegal miners also kill each other in the shafts. Because remember, if I kill you in the hole, there's nobody to account for you. If I kill you and I throw you down where the catch moves, or used to move, because the catch where the catch moves is a hole that goes straight down into the ground.
Yeah.
If I throw you in there, nobody will ever find you.
Yeah, this is really, really hectic stuff. So let's talk about that element of the danger, the criminal network that exists. People are being killed. At what level are they being killed? Someone sent me a WhatsApp text here that I think is also really interesting. It says, hi, Oliver. Have you seen the guns and automatic rifles that Zama Zamas carry? Go to Padfontein near Cloverdene. Who supplies them with bullets because they normally fire at will every single night? I suspect SAP's connections are the culprits. Talk to us about the syndicate network. How far up does it extend? Who gets involved? Who protects who? And who typically dies and under what circumstances do they die? And is there ever court cases, prosecutions that come out of this? Do these guys have lawyers? How does it work?
So here's how it works. So let's look at first who dies and who gets killed. Where do they get the guns, right? The guns are usually smuggled in from Mozambique. Remember, Mozambique had a lot of guns hidden in certain places during the period of turmoil. They had an armed struggle, right? And so, if you get an AK-47 that has been buried for 10 years, what you have to do is you get a new spring for it, and you have to oil it up, and that AK-47 will fire. That's the kind of gun an AK-47 is. And so, also remember, if I'm making, every 6 months I'm making 3.2 million rand, I can't afford to buy bullets. That wouldn't be an issue that stops me, right? And so, actually, the illegal miners that carry the biggest guns and are the most willing to fight, to engage in a gunfight, are the illegal miners from the sides of Johannesburg, and the ones who are based in Gauteng. Because remember, the security companies there are more aggressive towards them, right? And so most of the security companies actually are also partly to blame, because with them, it's shoot on sight. Even when the illegal miners don't have guns, they shoot. And so there's this relationship of villain and hero between the security company and the illegal miners. Whenever they see each other, if they know it's a hostile mine, they'll shoot without even guessing or thinking twice, right? So the most likeliest people to die here are the illegal miners and the security guards who are working on the ground, right? But also the prosecutions are very hard to come by, because when you're catching the person you catch, right, most of the time when they're caught by the police, they have money. Remember, you have to buy the hyperinflated food.
Yeah.
At any given time, an illegal miner will have 300,000 rand, 400,000 rand, 500,000 rand. So imagine that an illegal miner is caught by two policemen, and this man has got 300,000 rand on them. It's the middle of the month. Police officers also have debts. They have the debit orders and all of these things.
Yeah.
And this man says to them, let me keep the gold I have mined, take the money. What do you think the police officers are going to do to him?
Yeah, yeah.
Because remember, even here in Welkom, there was a huge case where a large number of police officers and even clerks at the police station got suspended with pay pending an investigation, because dockets were going missing under their watch, because they were linked to the illegal mining syndicates in Welkom. So it's so bad that police officers even get bribed at the police station. A person will come in with 300,000 rand, 500,000 rand, and a docket disappears.
It sounds really hard to believe the vast amounts of money circulating in this market, in this industry, when you look at illegal miners and realize there's nothing glamorous about any of the work they do. When you look, for instance, I see a lot of illegal miners when I drive to or from Randfontein using Main Reef and driving through places like Rietvlei, Kagiso, Witpoortjie here in Gauteng. And these guys are literally smelting mine on the side of the road in broad daylight, and you can see it happen. And nothing looks glamorous about it. They live in shanty towns. They don't live a glamorous life. It looks like they still live in poverty. So who is making the money truly, Lieto?
Right. So what you are seeing is the small scale guys. And those guys are the ones who go in for a day into the mine. They don't go that very deep in. So they'll find the scraps, right? Those are the scrappers, right? The ones who take a corrugated iron sheet and try to see if they can't melt anything. Those are the ones who are still doing the cheap kind of illegal mining.
There's levels to illegal mining. So there's levels to it. It's not just the guys we see coming out of a hole in the middle of the day when you live along on Dekkers in Roodepoort. There's levels to it, and there are guys who do it more seriously.
Exactly. The guy, if you see somebody who is illegal mining and is coming out in the middle of the day, they're a small-scale illegal miner. They're probably not making that much. They're just making enough to make ends meet. They'll probably make 1,000 and they'll find 3 grams or 5 grams or 10 grams of gold, right? They'll find like poultry amounts, right? Just enough to get food into the body and just make sure that you and the family have sustenance, right? But there are guys who are making like makeshift. So there's these machines that process gold, the big ones inside the mine, right? They're making makeshift ones that are on a smaller scale.
Yeah.
But it's a much more labor intensive. It's high skill levels. There's motors attached. It's a very deep process. And so the small scale guys, it seems like they are suffering, right? And the ones, the large-scale guys are more than happy to do it. You remember the last time you were in Welcome, you asked me, well, you were saying this town is on the decline, but I'm seeing Mercedes-Benzes. In Welcome, there's somebody who's been driving around in a Lamborghini. There's Jaguars here that roam around midday. When people are at work, there are people who are driving Lamborghinis around Welcome. And so those are the people who are making the real kind of money.
Right.
Those people can afford to buy mansions, can afford to bring out tons of people to work for them. Because at some point, you're going to stop going in for 6 months yourself, right? You can now get a boy who's in Welcome where there's basically no employment opportunities, and you tell them, hey, listen, you can make R1 million after 6 months. He doesn't know what the valuation of the gold is.
Right. So you're the one selling it. So you're the one determining the price at which you buy and sell. So he would not know. That was going to be my next question. Who is most likely to become an illegal miner, Lieto?
So most likely now, what is happening now is that either the young boys who are unemployed in our neighborhoods, but most likely what you're seeing is large operations of Zimbabweans and Lesotho nationals, right? In Welcome, those are the most prevalent groups. Because remember, it's easier just to go get people from Lesotho who are poor and bring them to South Africa, right? Because they are detached from their whole support system and support structure. When you get a boy from Welcome, he goes in for 6 months, gets R1 million, goes in for another 6 months, gets R1 million. At some point, he wants to know how the business works. At some point, he now starts his own operation. He becomes a competitor. Right? But when you get a person from Lesotho or a young boy from Zimbabwe and tell them, I'm going to bring you to South Africa, help you live the South African dream. This is what you have to sacrifice for it, but you're going to make R1 million. Those people are going to be reliant on you. They are going to owe you, right? And so that is what happens. And what then happens is they would be encouraged to not open a business that is illegal. So after you've gone in maybe 6 or 7 times, you've got R7 million, you'll be encouraged to open a tavern. Welcome is one of the towns with the highest amounts of taverns and bars in the whole country, when there are people in the whole province, I mean. So when there are people who are unemployed. But those are the businesses where you can launder money well, where you can do certain things that you can't do in any other business.
Right, and that's so there must be some sort of financial regulatory body that's evaluating the flow of cash. If anybody suspiciously spends a high amount of cash at a certain establishment, I would start to worry. SARS would start climbing on their backs, and other investigative authorities like the Hawks and that sort of thing. How do they clean the money? Because it must seem as though the money comes from a legitimate business for you to not get into trouble.
So you would think that it's easy to track these people down. So firstly, let's take a guy who just went in and illegally mined and got his first million. What he's advised to do is this. When you buy a house, go and buy a house in a relatively poor neighborhood, right? There's a neighborhood called Pusastin here where you can get a house for R100,000 or R150,000, right? Mm. Go and buy a house there, right? And then you will work out the paperwork later and then expand that house and make it as big as you want, right? And so SARS isn't regulating the buying of bricks for you to extend your house or the buying of wood and geysers, right? Mm. And then the second one, you want a car. They then say, don't go to a car dealership. Don't even go to a second-hand car dealership. Where they go is there's this company that sells cars that have been in accidents there in Johannesburg. This is where they go. They go to Johannesburg, they buy cars that have been in accidents from... this car sells on behalf of insurance companies.
Okay.
And so you can go into that place and buy a car that is basically broken for cash, and then you can fix it up. So there's no regulator, or SARS isn't looking for people who are fixing cars, right?
Yeah.
On a small scale level. So if you're buying an engine there and a door there and a wheel axle there, there isn't going to be a deep investigation into you. And then you open the bar, right? You come to Welcome and there are places where you buy a quart of alcohol for like 10 rand, right? You find that these people are bringing in big artists from Johannesburg, Black Coffee, all of these people. And so when you do that, you are now starting to launder the money in a cash business. Because the best place to launder money is in a cash-based business, right? And that's what a bar is, or a tavern is.
Yeah.
It's a cash business.
Right, and then so you can start cooking the books and lying about the volumes.
But also, very simply, when you're selling a quart for 10 rand, you can add a 10 rand onto it, or a 15 rand onto it, and so the 10 rand is cleaning the 15 rand.
Ah, yes.
It's a game of inches.
Yeah.
And so that's what they do. And so it's very hard to pin the tail on the donkey with these people. So the last people who were found were people who were found with gold in their possession and a ton of money. Those are the last people who were found. And the NPA is dragging their feet, prosecuting them. They lived right in my neighborhood. And they're still there.
Wow. Surely they must have lawyers who are smart enough to get the NPA to drag their feet, to bury them in paperwork that dissuades the NPA from pursuing these guys. It can't be by accident that the NPA dragged their feet on something so urgent, something so so serious.
There are 15 law firms in Welkom. Roughly each one is has got 8 or 9 lawyers on their staff. What do you think lawyers in Welkom do? Well, if you are a lawyer and you are coming to Welkom, what are you coming to do?
To be a lawyer, to help people with divorce settlements, to help people with their wills, to protect criminals, and if I do criminal defense, to do lawyer things.
In a town full of around about 70% unemployment, 15 law firms.
Right.
it is incongruous. So what happens is you go to a law firm here in Welkom, and the going rate is 200,000 rand. If you go and you say, hey, my friend was arrested at a mine, they say 200,000 rand. Retain me. That's it. The lawyers know the kind of money that the illegal miners are working with. And so you have lawyers who specialize in it. They specialize in burying the NPA up to their eyeballs with paperwork. And at times, I even heard one of the defenses of the defense was, so how did the police know that what these people had was gold? Because gold in its raw form is just like a black rocks, right?
Yeah.
It's you don't actually see the gold. The gold dust is basically sand that shimmers a lot. So they then asked them, how did the police officers know that this was gold specifically? How did you come to arrest my client when he's walking around with sand in a bag? And the case broke.
Wow.
There was no probable cause for you to stop this person and arrest them on the spot, because you arrested them on the spot and said you are holding illegal gold.
Right, right.
Do you know why? Because most of the time, the police are corrupt. And so the police will arrest you out of spite. They find you with gold but not with money. And so they arrest you.
Wow.
And so the system of policing these people is broken as well.
And so I'm assuming then the investigations are compromised, and this is how they often win the cases. So this seems, Leato, like an economy that sustains itself, and where there's 70% unemployment, the prospects for many young people would be to go into that industry, and it would seem to hold up the small towns like Welkom and put food on the table for many families over there. So my intuition then tells me this is not an industry you get rid of, because you can't. It's a black market industry. You legalize it so that you can have oversight of it and you get involved to make it safer. Why is the state not intervening in that format? Why is the state not saying, hey, look, let's not call it illegal mining. Let's call it small-scale community-based mining. Let's equip these guys so that they can do it safely. Let's give them access to markets and then let's start taxing them. But also let's give the community an opportunity to participate in this fairly.
So the government, in order to do that, they must go in and antagonize the mines, right? And the government of South Africa, if you grew up in a mining town, one thing that you know is that the government of South Africa would rather have a mine than have people in a town. And so that's the first point of call. But a lot of people will then say to you, oh, but what about the legislation? Is there legislation? And there is legislation for small-scale mining on an individual basis, right? Remember when the British came and settled here, they did not come to open large-scale mines. And so there was no viability for large-scale mines. They hadn't found large-scale ore deposits. So what you could do was come to South Africa and start panning. So panning is a form of gold mining where you basically mine with water and find little fragments of gold in the water while you're panning in the river. And so the legislation from that era is still there. All you have to do is to update that legislation in order to make this a legitimate activity. But my one issue is this, Oliver. If you do get to legalize it, how do you then get rid of the illegal element? Because the illegal element, if you legalize it, right, you're going to have some a buyback point. So if you, as Oliver, went and you did your legal mining, you will have to come to a point where you have to sell to the government or some entity in order to get money for the gold, right? The problem becomes the safety regulations of mining in the country prohibit you from mining for a certain amount of time. So you can't then do what the Zamazamas are doing, going in for 6 months at a time. It's against safety regulation, right? And so those are going to become the hurdles to then say, why would I leave the 3.2 million rand that I earned the hard way with these dangers? Because they've already accepted the danger that they are in. And then how do you bring them to a legitimate system where they'll have to work on a 9-to-5 basis and get less?
Absolutely. But then there's the promise of safety. There's the promise of not dying. Should that not be attractive given at the rate at which illegal miners are dying?
At the rate at which people are joining illegal mining, I don't think dying is an option that they consider. They, remember, if you have to go into illegal mining, and I've thought about it, to say, how desperate do you have to be to go into a situation where you are risking your life? Because remember, even the people who bring food to the mine, right? On a certain night, all that has to happen is you have to just meet with an agri-security guard who is not on your payroll, who doesn't want to be on your payroll, who's new. He will come and he'll shoot you in the head. And so that's the risk that these people are taking.
Right.
They've already bought into that risk of death. And it seems like when you are poor, because remember, poverty is an assault. It is a violence against you.
Yeah.
And you now move towards and saying, well, I would rather opt into a violence that would yield me some kind of benefit rather than stay in a violence that doesn't yield me benefit. It only yields me hunger. And
yeah.
So that's the kind of thinking that has been adopted by illegal miners. And I think it will be very hard for you to get them out of that kind of thinking. Because remember, even legal miners are stealing from mines and giving the gold that they steal to illegal miners. They sell it to them. And so the illegal mining is not just illegal miners in isolation. Illegal miners are now co-opting legal miners to steal gold, to steal the raw materials of gold, and somehow bring it to them as well. Because remember, when gold is in its dust form, if you are wearing a wool jersey, you know your wool can just pick up the gold and hold it.
Right. Because of the static...
Go ahead. That's what they do. You go in with a wool jersey and you dip the jersey in what you call in the gold dust, and then you put the jersey underneath your overalls. It's bad for your skin. Those people come and they have, because remember, gold is radioactive, right?
Yeah.
It's bad for human contact in certain states. So those people go to hospital all the time with skin infections and all of these things, but they're willing to risk that for the buck. And that is the thing that they would have to unlearn if you want to formalize it and legalize it.
Absolutely. Yeah, so what is to be done, Lieto? Where to from now?
So from now, is what you need to do is to somehow get the mine as well, if you need the safety, the only other entity other than the mine itself, right, the mining company, that can hold a mine and make it as safe as possible for people in the mine is the state. And so if the state then holds the mines, then they would also have to buy the gold from the illegal miners.
Right.
It means that Velkom would have to have a Fort Knox-like facility. And so a state, I don't think the state of South Africa is willing to go that far. The state of South Africa is more than happy to outsource its mining activity. The people of Kolobeni wanted shares in that mine that they want to build there. The platinum mine they want to build there in Kolobeni. But Gwadamantashe is resisting that because the state would have to have responsibility of those people and partial responsibility of that mine. And so the state doesn't want that. And so the biggest problem that is going to come in is that how do we get the political will? How do we get the state to buy in? And that is going to be the hardest part to do.
Give us a call. The number is 011-883-0702. If you would like to weigh in on this conversation, perhaps you have a question or a comment that you would like to make, you can make that more than welcome to do so. Again, the number is 011-883-0702. Do you perhaps live close to an area where illegal mining activity takes place? What have you come to learn of it? What do you make of it? And what do you think is to be done? Do you feel safe where you live as a result of illegal mining potentially taking place around there? The number is 011-883-0702. Give us a call and weigh in on the conversation. You can also SMS me on 31702 and WhatsApp me on 072-702-1702. Reading a couple of WhatsApp texts here. Tahir Mulofo in Forest Hill says, Krugersdorp illegal guns. They are like military weapons in those illegal mining people. And I can confirm those people are very, very rich, Oliver. So I guess it speaks to the amount of money that circulates in that industry. Herbert Mangiani in Western Area says, Oliver, 2 days back, they were shooting at each other at abandoned Carltonville mine, where the police will tell you when those guys fight, they don't get closer to them. It's dangerous. Someone else saying crime of this magnitude is what the doctors call spontaneous remission, to explain the unexplainable, especially for underlooked places like Velkom. The syndicate is equivalent to Mexican cartel. Actually, the Zamazamas is our version of the Mexican cartel. Someone else here saying, hi, Oliver, even if you legalize illegal mining, there will always be blood spilled among the gangs, which are already there, just like the drug business. Yeah, it seems incredibly crazy. Lieto, is that a fair comment that illegal mining syndicates are our version of the Mexican drug cartel? And if blood will always spill, like with the drug gangs, could mining towns see Cape Flats level of gun violence and killings happening every weekend?
I don't think it is that extreme because for the most part, most illegal miners are content with what they have. Even if you get R1 million, right? If you're not greedy, R1 million is a lot of money, right? And so it's a little bit of an exaggeration when you say the sort of Mexican cartel sort of thing, because I've researched the Mexican cartel a lot, and their level of violence is almost untenable, right? But when you're looking at the Johannesburg areas, it is because it is hard to illegally mine in places like Johannesburg because the security company, right? And so that's when you start to see the gun violence, right? But when you come to places like Virginia, Velkom, Allen Ridge, you get to see a more malleable system where the security companies aren't as violent towards these people and they aren't as violent towards each other. They have a common understanding to say, the more we kill each other, the more attention we draw to ourselves. That's why the most attention is given to the illegal mining that happens in Johannesburg. When you think about it, you don't know about the illegal mining that happens in Rustenburg, for instance. We don't even consider it, right? But it happens on a very large scale. And so there are illegal miners for every kind, for manganese, for copper, for everything you find an illegal miner. But here's another thing, Oliver. The most unintended consequence, or the unintended, industry for illegal miners. And this is a funny but sad thing as well, because medically it's a big problem. So illegal miners, for the most part, refine their gold and their findings with mercury. So mercury, as a heavy metal that is malleable as it is, can separate the sand from the gold. So it captures the gold and holds it and makes it a clump, right? And so working with raw mercury is bad for you. Mercury evaporates when it gets onto your skin or when it gets too hot, and the heavy metals fill your body. So what happens is, most of the time, the male potency goes down. So you can no longer hold an erection if you have heavy metal poisoning. So the unintended consequence of that is that everywhere you go, in places like Belcom and Virginia, even in the supermarket, in like a spaza shop, what you will find is male enhancement pills. That is also an industry that is unregulated, that is not SABS approved, but those come mostly from areas like Pakistan, Bangladesh, where medical oversight over such products is not really tough. Places like Singapore and Thailand, those male enhancement pills come from there, make their way, as wild as it sounded, pill from Thailand illegally makes its way to Belcom and a spaza shop in Belcom. That is another unintended consequence. But health-wise, illegal miners also have a very high risk of having heavy metal poisoning, heart conditions that come from it, strokes, because it's the working with the mercury is almost very hard. And what most of them have found to do, funny thing, can I tell you what they found to do, is that they'll go into a place that has a sewage flow, right? So there's yards that have the manholes, right, in your yard. So they'll go and open the manhole, wrap whatever gold they have in a blanket. Because remember, the sewage sort of flows, right?
Yeah.
Sewage flows in a river like thing. So they then secure the blanket with the gold inside, and what they do is they put it in this river. So the river of excrement and water sort of filters out the sand and leaves and clumps the gold up like the mercury does. So the excrement that goes into the blanket would then form clumps around the gold. So they'll rifle through the feces and find clumps of gold.
Yeah.
That is part of the way they do it as well.
This is a finite resource, right?
Municipal infrastructure, yeah.
These guys, like you said in the beginning of the conversation, they go to mines that have been closed down because the return on investment for the mines to operate there is no longer the same. It means the gold is close to running out. And so at some point, it will truly run out, right? That even illegal mining can't continue chipping away because there's no gold left. There's no copper left. Surely this thing will organically bring itself to an end, this industry of illegal mining.
It probably will. So at times there are certain factors you have to consider when they say the gold mine doesn't see the economic viability. So the yield of gold in the Golden Arc, that's what they call the Free State area, for instance, right? So this area here in the Free State, Belcom, Allen Ridge, Virginia, right? What happens in the Golden Arc is that the yield of gold that you get is in the higher 90th percentile, right? And so when a gold mine gets gold that is in the 70th percentile, they then say it's not economically viable because it's not bringing in the billions it used to.
Right.
And it also it's more labor intensive to process.
Right.
But that gold is still gold. But at times, so when a mine closes down operations or it closes down a shaft to open another shaft, it's not that the gold is at some finite point where it's almost at a stopping point, but it's that the yields that they're getting there are not suitable to their standards of the billions that they get in a week. So what happens then is that what a mine would actually do is just leave a shaft like that. That's why they leave it protected with these security services. If you leave a shaft like that for a couple of years, 10, 15 years, you come back, the yield of gold is higher. And so that's what mines do.
Mm. Lieto, thank you so much for your conversation, your insights into illegal mining, Zamazamas. It's truly appreciated. A thoroughly enriching, insightful conversation. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Oliver.
That is Lieto Ntoba, lecturer at the Central University of Technology in the Free State.